Ohjelman tarjoavat Design Museo ja Grafia.
Can you build industrial processes on your own? Could the design process be faster if imperfections are allowed? Can a mistake be beautiful? Is there anything good in mass production? How can consumer goods be so cheap? And could office supplies become tools for jewelry making? How do we know if a smile is real? What does all this mean? And what can we learn from designer Jenny Nordberg, who is opening her solo exhibition at the Design Museum tonight? This is Helsinki Design Weekly, this week in English, as you can hear. My name is Anni Korkman, and so nice to have you there. Hej Jenny.
Hej.
Välkommen till Helsinki Design Weekly.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you. How are you?
Very good. I think we both have quite a busy day. It's your exhibition opening tonight at the Design Museum.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling better than I thought, actually. I had a good night's rest and feeling energetic and happy.
Very good to hear. So you are visiting Helsinki. You're based in Skåne.
Yeah.
And what kind of place is that to live in for a designer?
Well, the design scene in Sweden is very much centered around Stockholm. So in a sense, it's living in the wrong place. But I have actively chosen to live there because I feel freer living there, not comparing myself to the Stockholm design scene all of the time. So it's both good and bad, I would say. But I see the world as my working field, not only the country where I live in.
Of course. So you're working, you have an international career. Has that also been an active choice?
Yeah, I think living in the countryside, as I do, and also in the southern part of Sweden, it was, I think my career really took off when I decided to not only focus on Sweden, but to see the world as my working field. So I don't know. I've the time that we live in with all the digital media has made that quite easier than when I started, for example, 15 years ago.
This is something I'm just quite interested in because I'm getting a little bit bored with the narrative of our sort of national designer profiles, if that makes sense, because it's a global world. Mm. Lots of us study abroad. We get our influences necessarily not from the exact place where we live in or grew up in, but rather take influences from everywhere. So it's just that's how it works today, I suppose. But for you, this exhibition in Design Museum Helsinki is the first exhibition in Helsinki.
Yes, first exhibition in Finland.
Okay, yeah. That's exciting. Yeah. What kind of process has this exhibition building been for you?
It's been a pure joy experience. Working with the professional team at the museum has been fantastic. They're so organized and planned, and we were finished quite early with like the building this week, and I'm just impressed and happy. And it's also nice, this is my first ever retrospective exhibition, so it's been nice to sort of conclude what I've done the past 15 years. You never sort of get that opportunity otherwise.
No, I know. And you also have that reflection of the team around you who might point out different things that
absolutely
It's your first retrospective exhibition. However, the exhibition title Strategies for Moving Freely does refer to a book that was published a couple of years ago in 2020 that also discusses the body of work of yours, and the title apparently quite aptly describes your ways of working. You don't only question the designer's task, the conditions of the industrial design field and contemporary life, but also actively seek solutions. And this is something I'm hoping to dive in just today during the following hour. But first I want to ask, how does creating an exhibition differ from publishing a book?
Well, it's of course the physical aspect, also having to think about how the visitor will experience what you're exhibiting, and what to show and how much to show, and is it too crowded, is this interesting? So it's a different kind of selection. Also in the book, the texts are much more longer and maybe uses quite an advanced language. But in this exhibition, we've tried this new way of talking with a simple language that I think has been quite interesting, like how to explain something in the simplest way. That has been a new and quite fun experience for me.
Which is sometimes the hardest thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Really, yes. And I suppose that's something I've personally also learned here in the radio studio. I obviously want to make the themes accessible and also want to make sense of things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I suppose also when you get excited about stuff, you tend to move on to these abstract levels.
Yeah.
And it's good to have a team around you go, so what do you actually mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That?
And also it seems like design, the field of design and the topic of design can be for some so simple, for others totally abstract. I guess you can
exactly
have experienced that as well. And yeah, so it's important to talk in a simple way also, I think.
Of course, yeah. And in an inviting or welcoming
yeah.
way about things. And in Design Museum, they do that very well. I suppose for me, it also sounds like book is something that could be seen as a private experience. And then an exhibition is always a shared one, a social one.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm sure it has been an interesting journey trying to translate those themes into a new format. So now when we are all able to visit the exhibition, what do you wish we'd pay attention to when we do so?
Well, me and the museum have actively chosen to ask a question for each object or project, and that is very central in my practice, and maybe that is something that I wish the visitor would take with him or her, that it is possible to pose questions and ask, could it be in this way instead? If there's something you don't agree on, could it be in a different way? Yeah. Maybe that's central in the exhibition, I would say.
So you apply this quite like problem-based or question-based practice. Apparently you work in a very research-driven way. And what you're presenting in the exhibition, there are the works are unique, produced in a limited series. Is there a specific question that you present that's been in your mind more than others lately?
I mean, I have one of my main hobbies is to think about the global production system that we're in. And this is always something that's very close to me. And two of the latest projects relate to that topic more than the others, maybe. And one of them is this transportation system that we've made ourselves dependent on, that is transporting materials and goods all over the world. But that the pandemic and Russia's invasion of Ukraine has sort of flaunted that this is not a sustainable way of doing it. I don't know, but these are...
It's a great example of something that's affected us all.
Mm.
In what ways have you noticed that the moving of materials or the moving of goods that you would usually get from very far away, from the other side of the world in a couple of days, which has now, obviously during the last couple of years, not... has changed quite a bit. Is there something that has affected you personally?
Yeah, I opened an exhibition last year in Sweden called Active Cargo that was just Like the whole exhibition was around this topic. And I built three different machines, and those machines were to be finished 3 months before the exhibition was opening, but they were actually delivered 2 days before the opening because of the issues with the transportations. Wow. And the different machine parts. So yeah, absolutely. I was almost sick of stress.
Oh, that sounds horrible. I can relate to that.
Yeah, but I think it's also interesting because this is the new reality, I would say.
Of course. And the PR team of the exhibition must have been quite excited.
Yeah, they thought it was a nice story to tell.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah,
I can imagine. I suppose something that I underlined whilst doing my research for this episode was how often you talk about freedom. And it's also in the title of the exhibition. You say that as a designer, freedom is your central value. You even talk about freedom when we first began, when I asked about where you live. Could you talk a little bit more, reflect a little bit more on what kind of role does freedom play in your process?
Well, I'm a trained industrial designer. I went to the Lund University, and I've wanted to become an industrial designer even since I was like 7. But then during the middle of that program, I realized that I need to be a part of this global production system, being more a tool than a free thinker, maybe. So I remember I said to my professor that I think I need to change. I need to go into art school instead of this industrial design program, because this is not for me. I need to be free. And he was just like, yeah, but the design scene needs critical thinkers like you. And he persuaded me to stay. And today I'm happy for that. But it is, of course, not always easy to be this critical person within your own industry, within the design field, for example. So creating different strategies for that has been quite central for me, because it's a sacrifice that you make. Running your own studio, maybe being a bit, I wouldn't say hard to deal with, but pointing at problems within your own field. So that's maybe what I'm talking about when I'm talking about being free, that if I have chosen this way of working, it's not the easiest way, but at least I'm free. And to become even more freer, I have these different kinds of strategies or methods, which is talked about in the exhibition. And I have developed them throughout the years. Yeah.
So when you talk about the difficulties that choosing freedom brings, what sort of things do you refer to?
So, for example, I run a lot of my own production. I don't design for other companies necessarily. Sometimes I do, but that's not my main practice. But I do produce a lot of things myself, or in close collaborations with different small workshops in Sweden. And for example, they are all very, very male dominated. They are driven by men. And coming there as a tiny woman, having these ideas about wanting to do experiments within their production can be, well, hard. I would say sometimes quite even impossible. So I have developed methods there to do it anyways. And that can be, for example, I have this alter ego called not Jenny, but Johnny. And he has an email address and he sends emails and he can get things done in a way that Jenny can't. So I use him, for example.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, he even has his own perfume now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's exhibited in the exhibition.
What does Johnny smell like?
Well, it smells like, my gallerist said it smelled like unpacking a dead man's boxes.
Wow.
So
hot.
Hot, yeah. It's called the ghost, because that's what Johnny is. He's never around. But I also have bought a lot of equipment, like industrial production equipment, and adapted it to my own studio in order to be able to do these experiments that I'm not able to do within the industry. So, yeah.
Sounds like freedom is hard work, actually.
Yeah, but it's also beautiful and fun.
Let's continue with the beautiful fun of freedom after a tiny little break. Studiossa tänään Helsinki Design Weeklissä mun vieraana on Jenny Nordberg. Jenny is opening her exhibition at Design Museum and we talk a little bit about her creative process. In the exhibition you ask if design process could be faster if imperfections would be allowed. This is a really interesting question for me. I'm super interested about the creative process, which tends to be shown as something quite polished and something that just happens when you design or be a so-called creative in the creative field. And yet it can be really annoying and really messy. So I would like to ask about Jenny Nordberg's philosophy regarding mistakes in the process.
Well, isn't it the mistakes that sort of bring something to the table? That's often where we find new solutions and even innovation in sometimes. I'm all for letting the design process take time, but there are also benefits from going very, very fast. So, yeah. I guess it's great with both attitudes.
Exactly. In the exhibition, you present a 3D printed chair that's based on a rough model of a chair in a scale of 1 to 10. Three easy-to-use applications and programs were used for the 3D design and modeling. Mistakes were allowed at different stages of production. At the same time, the goal was to find ways to create the product quickly and flexibly. Tell about this.
Yeah, so this is an idea that I had for a long time and that I also used in another project. I just built very quickly a small-scale cardboard version of a chair. Didn't really design it, just sort of the icon of a chair. And then I scanned it with my mobile phone, this free-to-use mobile app. And the app, of course, does its own interpretations. What is this? And then that file was transferred into my computer, where my 3D program did its own interpretation of what it got, sort of. And then my 3D printer simplified it, or not my printer, but the program attached to the printer, simplified the file even more, and then also split it into 20 pieces. That was also based on an algorithm that I didn't decide. So the design process was very fast, and the production of it also quite fast. And then these 20 pieces were just mounted together like a puzzle. And the aesthetics of the chair, of course, I had some thoughts about it, etc. But I tried to leave the design to the softwares, even if they were not design softwares. Yeah, you get it. So, yeah, that's one way of doing things quicker. Mm-hmm. And also, reaching another kind of aesthetics than if I would sit down and draw the perfect chair, which I maybe couldn't, by the
really
way.
That's really interesting to let go of the control of the aesthetics as
well. Yeah.
Because I can sort of understand the idea of using these softwares as something more than a tool, but almost like a co-producer or a colleague of some kind.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to also let go of the desired end result regarding of how the object will look like. So you bring these, you sort of build these new kinds of beauty values emerge from the production process, and this is something that that can be seen in the exhibition later on. I also noticed that you've been awarded as the Designer of the Year in Sweden twice in last year, and also Elle Deco Design Awards. Sounds like you have managed to communicate your approach to a wider audience as well, even though now it may seem like something quite a complex methodology. Even
I've just always tried to be true to what I want to do, since this way of working freely comes with a price, of course. So this has been already from the beginning, 17 years ago, since I graduated, very, very important to me that be true to myself and what I believe in. And as I was talking to one of the staff at the museum before earlier today, that people has often seen me as weird and strange, and I'm not strange at all. I'm just following my sort of heart and gut feeling. And I think if you have the guts to do that, it's a fantastic journey.
Happy to hear. And I suppose even if you mention being difficult or being strange in questioning critically some of the industry issues, you can also do it in a very constructive way. I would imagine if you were a very vocal critic of phenomena, that might also affect your yeah. work or your career.
I mean, I try to be critical in a constructive way that I also proposes alternative solutions. Like, I'm not only criticizing, I'm also always saying, like, could we do it like this instead? Would this be an option? So,
could you give an example of this?
Well, a recent project that I did for a client, they wanted something unique but produced within mainstream production. And how is that even possible? And it was also supposed to be quite cheap.
Wow, and what a brief.
Congratulations. But, I mean, that is not an example of being critical, but there I had to come up with other solutions, like, could we do it like this instead? Could we do it like this? And the producer were just like, no, we do it only in this way. So then I had to buy my own equipment and do this alternative surface treatment, and then go back to the producer and say, well, look, it actually worked. We can do it like this instead. And then they were like, okay, go ahead. So, yeah.
You took your own path.
Yeah, yeah. You have to do that sometimes, yeah.
Who would be your dream client, or is there a project that you would especially like to do next?
I don't think like that.
No.
But I have this idea. I have this concept of only saying yes to fun clients. And this is a privilege, I know. And it has taken me many years to come there. But today I have this opportunity of doing that. So I would say almost every client that I work with now are like dream clients. Mm. And it's very important for me that we do serious work, but we also have fun working together.
And what is it that you're working with at the moment?
Well, I'm working with a long-time client of mine, which is a store in the city of Malmö, close to where I live. And I say yes to this client based on one person, otherwise I wouldn't do it. But so we're redoing the interior of the store, and I'm helping him with that. Then I also work for, I don't know this word in English, but it's called Länsstyrelsen, and it's the ones who sort of makes sure that the laws are followed in the southern part of Sweden where I live. And I work with them, helping them promoting the local grown and produced fibers, linen, hemp and wool. And we are working together to make these fibers seen as commercial alternatives to faraway fibers such as cotton or oil-based fibers. So these are two typical projects and customers, I would say.
If they are a typical project or customers, they still sound very different to one another.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to hear.
Yeah, but I also have, this is nothing that you can see in my social media, but I have a lot of clients where I work more as a consultant. And that's often companies wanting to transform or evolve into being more sustainable. So I help them through that process. That has been a core value or thing for me since I graduated, really.
So that's like research work, isn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah. I think we're sort of floating towards the theme that I wanted to discuss with you regarding local manufacturing and knowledge sharing. You are the creative director of SPOC, which in English is Contemporary Production and Consumption. It's a production platform for Swedish designers and other creatives, a website that's a search engine for finding producers all around Sweden who manufacture small-scale series and prototypes. How did SPOC came about?
So this was in a time where a lot of Swedish newspapers were writing about or saying that Swedish production was dead. A lot of production was offshored, mostly into the southeast part of Asia, and a lot of Swedes believed that nothing was able to be produced in Sweden any longer. But for us who worked with production, I mean, we knew that that wasn't really the truth. A lot of production, yes, has moved, but there was still a lot of production left. So for a long time, I tried to sort of highlight this, and I did exhibitions highlighting this, and then I wanted to make this knowledge accessible for everyone. And so I teamed up with an institution called Form Design Center in Malmö, and we slowly started to build this website. And in the beginning, it was only based in Skåne, where I live, and now it's spread out all over Sweden. So it's very, very simple. Just lifting, highlighting production alternatives and also local materials. Mm. So that no one can really say that it's not possible to produce local any longer, because it truly is.
So it's aimed for professionals, for designers and creatives and companies, not for consumers as such?
No, our main target group is designers, architects, artists, companies wanting to work with local production.
I'm just curious, was there a benchmark that you would look into? Because it sounds like an idea that almost like government should have or maintain.
That's why I always said that it should be a free service, state funded, because I think the government should have been doing
this.
So, it's growing and it is state-funded. So, I guess it's the same situation here in Finland. A lot of production is still here and there are opportunities. We just need to know of them.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a lot of manufacturers in Finland, especially in furniture field, for example, in Pohjanmaa, which I don't know actually in English, a bit more up north, on the coast, and still there is this a bit of a saddened discourse around the topic that we are losing the crafts and losing the know-how of local production. I suppose now it's time to take one more little break and then continue with Jenny Nordberg here in Radio Helsinki. Kuuntelet siis Helsinki Design Weeklyä. Studiossa Anni Korkman, and also today with me I have Swedish designer Jenny Nordberg, and also Minni Soverila is joining us in the studio. Minni has been working closely with Jenny's exhibition here. Before we talk more about the exhibition themes, I wanted to follow up on something that we discussed with Jenny just now. Even though I'm not a big fan of comparing like national design cultures, people ask me what's the most interesting thing about Finnish design today. It's not something I would be particularly interested in, yet I would like to talk a little bit more about the design culture in Sweden. Because based on just the last 40 minutes or so, it sounds like you've had to work really hard to create your own path, a professional path within that field.
I would say, when I look at Finnish design or the Finnish design scene and also the Danish design scene, it seems as design is appreciated in another way than in Sweden. I would say in Sweden, design is taken for granted in another way maybe, and not something that we really want to pay for. So, and it's strange because we have the similar kind of heritage when it comes to design in all three countries. Sorry, what was the initial question?
Today's design field in Sweden, what kind of things are people discussing at the moment? Or what have you noticed?
Like a big discussion now among designers, not among the design brands, but among designers, is the system for payment. So, for example, it's still based on this old idea of you get a tiny sum for each product that is sold, called royalty. But that was sort of initiated and built on a different kind of production, and maybe it's 50 years old, at least in Sweden, and that really doesn't work any longer. So a lot of designers in Sweden has taken the power into their own hands and started producing themselves and also building brands themselves. Because why design something and get peanuts if you can design something and also produce it yourself and actually get the whole profit instead of maybe 3%? So that's very central. And I don't know how it is here in Finland. Is that the same discourse?
Well, based on what I know, and I might be wrong, but I suppose there are issues with royalties, but then because of the business of design manufacturing isn't very broad, or there aren't many bigger design brands that would be able to hire designers, like full-time or in-house designers, then there aren't so many possibilities for designers to start their own brands either. So the whole approach into looking into field of design, or perhaps now we are referring into furniture design, it might be different. That's not always the case. Obviously, we have some success stories and bigger companies and Finnish designers joining international design brands and their teams as well. It is interesting, though, that even my friends who I've spoken to, who are furniture designers or industrial designers, they have to negotiate the percentage themselves, which is why I've also had designers joining me here in Radio Helsinki studio talking about the need for transparency of these sums that we are discussing, which is another issue, I guess. When there's so much competition, people are quite jealous of their own. Yes.
But how is it here? Because in Sweden, the design scene is the only field that isn't organized. Like, we have an organization for the architects, for photographers, for graphic designers, etc. But the sort of product and industrial designers are not organized. And I would say that's one of the main issues to why the payment is so not working. Is that the same case?
No,
here?
There is. We have an organization, the Association of Designers, Ornamo. So it's not entirely similar situation.
Yeah.
In the name of transparency, or in the name of sort of supporting the field, I think it's quite nice to also compliment a colleague. So would you have an example of a recent Swedish design success story that you'd wish to share?
I don't know if it's called success stories, but I think there's a lot of talented designers in Sweden working quite freely and in the field between design and art. And for example, one person called Kajsa Wilner, she's having an exhibition right now in Stockholm during the Design Week in Stockholm. At the same time, also Nick Ross is exhibiting. I think he's also a true inspiration for designers. And
and why is that? Why is it inspiration?
He's also very true to his design ideas and values, and he also goes sort of or follows his own path. Then I would say Fredrik Paulsson is also interesting because he has started his own brand called Joy, and I know, well, I mean, some of the reasons are the ones that we talked about before. Wanting to be in control and running your own thing instead of being in the control of others. So, yeah.
And I recently was happy to learn that there's a lot of design students listening to Helsinki Design Weekly program. So would you have some advice to any young designer entering the field?
So I think the ones that I can see today that are successful are the ones who have their own idea or their own aesthetics or their own style. Trying to imitate or mimic what's already been done is maybe not the path to go, I would say. So to work with your own body of inspiration and to be, yeah, do your own thing, sort of.
That's a nice advice, and yet sometimes, even though I'm not a designer myself, but I suppose I have been looking for my professional voice and trying to find things that matter to me and ways to discuss them. Mm. It has taken me quite a long time.
Yeah, yeah. I think you found it?
Well, I'm sort of might be starting to getting an idea, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has required a lot of also listening and, yeah. and just researching. I think sometimes, at least when I was studying,
yeah.
It feels like an enormous pressure to start already having your own things to stand up for or present. Or
I agree. Yeah. I mean, the first years of studying, I was totally lost. It was not until the end. When I studied, it was like a 5-year program. And I remember it was maybe the last half year that I sort of started to sense what my thing or idea or style or path was really. So it's nothing that you can stress really.
Mm.
It takes time.
Exactly. Mm. Minni.
We have talked with Jenni previously about the, how would you say, legacy? What would you like to teach to younger generations of designers? And you told me that you have taken quite a lot of risks in your career, like doing your own thing. And then you were like, maybe that's not a thing that you can actually say to designers, that you have to make your own way first and then you can start to take more risks. But what do you feel about that now? Do you think that the risk taking was your way of doing and that's something that people should do or be more careful about it?
For me, it was the only way to do it. And I have always been really good at surviving on very little money. So that has been maybe my core strength because I always had like extra work, working weekends. I think I stopped with that maybe 7 years ago. But I was willing to sacrifice that to be able to take these risks. But I'm not saying that it's for everyone or that everyone should or can do it. But yeah, it's strange, the things you put yourself through just to, for my sake, then be free or do your own thing. But it's more a way of living than just a job for me.
Yeah, I suppose that's quite usual, like the usual case in our field.
Mm.
And then that we have these different phases of life as well. And you look back and you're like, how was I, what? How was I able to do that? And
And I think Jenni is also leading with example. You are making your own choices. You're only working 4 days a week. You are living where you want to live. And you're like, by working the way you're working, you're saying this can be done. And people don't have to convert into the basic mold of what a designer is. A cool person working in Stockholm and doing only clean
a cool
things.
Person, a man person.
A man person.
Only working with massive commercial jobs.
Yeah. This is going a little bit backward to the conversation. I was thinking about the style and the practice that you said that some feel it's weird or you have this weirdness in your works. I don't see it that way, but I don't know what you think, Anni, because I think in Finnish design now there are many designers doing quirky and fun and experimental things, and that's not weird. That's
you
something that's going on
aesthetically,
yeah, and also philosophically. Like, what's your idea behind the design?
Mm. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, maybe you should be working in Finnish design field.
Maybe I should move here.
No, that's an interesting. I did actually I did join this talk some time ago in which the topic was playfulness. Playfulness is coming back and this idea of being a bit wild with shapes and colors. I suppose when times get a bit darker, we require some colors and some more expressiveness into our daily objects as well. Minni, you've been working closely with the exhibition opening in Design Museum. What has been your key learning or key intake from Jenny's show?
I'm now a little bit Jenny fangirl.
I can tell. Which is super nice.
It's always nice to meet designers who are present in the real world and like to discuss difficult themes with openness. And I think that, how would you say it? Jenny's exhibition is not a guilt trip, even though it goes through difficult questions and points out problems in the world. But I think it does it in the way that gives hope and gives us something that we can do. We can start to go forward with this one. And I think that's something that's very important.
And it empowers you. It
empowers and it gives you a direction where to go, not just we're all screwed. Mm. What can we do about it?
I really like having an exhibition that's solutions oriented. I think a lot of design talk, which I'm guilty of myself, is we have wicked problems, but design can help without even sort of going too much into detail of what the issues are and what can we actually do to solve them. I know it's a busy day and it's a big day for you. It's also a big day for a couple of others because tomorrow it's the first day of Helsinki Design Week, which is why my voice is a bit tired. but there's a lot of things happening and also Design Museum is taking part in quite a few of these things. What are you looking forward to the most, Minni?
Of course, the Jenny's exhibition is opening for the public tomorrow. That's a big thing for us. And also the lunch talk event where Jenny is talking about her practice and the exhibition is tomorrow at 1. Also, Design Museum and Architecture Museum have built together this Adolab Lab, which is a exhibition that has toured around Finland and now it has arrived to Vuosaari. And I think it's very interesting because it's showcasing local design from Vuosaari for everyone. And I think that's something that I'm looking forward and seeing. It's in the yard of Vuotalo.
Wonderful. It's hyper-local design presented at Helsinki Design Week. Hey, thank you so much for also joining us, Minni Soverila. And of course, thank you, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Coming to Helsinki Design Weekly show. I encourage all listeners to visit the exhibition and have a think of the biggest question of them all, how to get inspired but also do your own thing. Kiitos paljon sinulle, joka kuuntelit tämän Helsinki Design Weeklin jakson. Tosiaan Helsinki Design Week, jos kuuntelet tätä suorana tai lauantaina tai podcastina 17.9. asti, niin Helsinki Design Week on nyt käynnissä. Tapahtumia on yli 130 muotoilusta, arkkitehtuurista. Koitetaan näyttää muotoilua mahdollisimman laajasti ja mahdollisimman monialaisesti. Kiva, jos pääset käymään. Mutta joka tapauksessa kuullaan taas ensi viikolla täällä Radio Helsingin aalloilla. Kiva päivää!